Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Our mission here, as always, is to take on these huge research projects and, you know, pull out the core ideas for you. And today, we are wrestling with a framework that is truly staggering in its ambition. It's called the Cosmological Coherence Principle, or CCP.
It really is. It's almost a unified theory of everything, but with a focus on organization, this source material we're digging into, this huge three-volume work. It isn't just looking at physics. Or just biology. It claims the universe has this consistent underlying grammar for how it builds and sustains order.
And we're going to dive into that grammar today.
Yeah.
So we're talking about a theory that's saying the way a star forms, the way a cell works, even the way a market crashes.
Or a civilization rises.
Right. They're all governed by the same handful of principles.
Exactly.
Our goal here is to pull out those core dynamics of coherence and maybe figure out why this framework is so critical for navigating the world right now.
Yeah.
This coherence transition they talk about.
Mm-hmm. That is the crux of it. The CCP says that organized complexity, this thing they call coherence, it's not some lucky accident. It's the universe's necessary and efficient answer to continuous energy flow. And once you see that pattern, I mean, you start seeing it everywhere.
Okay, let's unpack that. Let's start at the beginning with the foundational physics. Because the classic kind of frustrating puzzle in science has always been the second law of thermodynamics. Entropy. Things are supposed to get more disordered. So how do we explain, you know, planets, trees, us?
Yeah.
All this order.
It's because we've been looking at the wrong state of being, fundamentally. Science has historically privileged equilibrium, that's the cold, dead state of maximum disorder, as the natural resting place for everything.
Okay.
But the cosmos, as the source material points out, it's driven by continuous energy flows. That makes non-equilibrium the actual default state. So order isn't fighting entropy, it's actually serving it.
That feels completely backwards. How can order serve disorder?
Think of it this way. You have a huge difference in potential. Let's say hot sun hitting cold space. That difference, that gradient, it needs to be leveled out.
Right.
The quickest, most efficient way for the system to process that energy is often to form an ordered structure. They call these dissipative structures.
So like a hurricane.
A hurricane is a perfect example. It's a highly ordered vortex, but its entire purpose is to dissipate heat from the ocean into the atmosphere way faster than just, you know, disorganized evaporation could.
So order pops into existence because it's the best tool for creating chaos more effectively. That is a huge shift in perspective.
It is. And the CCP boils this down into a kind of universal checklist, a universal grammar that you need for any complex system to last. And if you're building anything, an organization, a life form, you need these three things. Always.
Okay, what are they? Give us the checklist.
First, a sustained energy gradient. That's the engine. No flow, and the system just collapses. Second, you need a boundary. Something that constrains and channels that flow. It's not a wall. It's a selective interface that manages what comes in and out.
And the third.
And third, because these systems are always breaking down, you need a mechanism of regeneration or repair. You have to be able to rebuild yourself.
I love that. It immediately becomes this diagnostic tool. You know, if your company's failing, or even a relationship, you can just run through that list.
Is the energy there?
Is the boundary clear?
And
can you repair the damage?
Exactly.
Okay, so that logic scales up. Let's make the jump from physics to biology, the microcosm. How does that universal grammar show up in, like, primitive chemistry?
The jump really starts with the simplest form of coherence you can get, autocatalysis.
Okay.
This is where a product of a chemical reaction actually speeds up its own formation. It's like the universe's first positive feedback loop. Chemical compounding interest.
And that lets a set of reactions kind of sustain itself against the flow of disorder.
Yes, and once you have those loops, they start to cooperate. You get autocatalytic networks. But then you get to the defining moment of life.
Which is?
The moment chemistry figured out how to harness energy in this completely universal way. And this is one of the most beautiful details in the source material.
Oh, what?
The universal energy currency of all life isn't really ATP. It's actually proton gradient.
Dude, gone glass.
Think about it.
Yeah.
Early Earth had all these natural pH differences, acidity differences across porous rocks. Life basically learned to exploit those differences, building tiny hydroelectric dams into its cell walls.
So every living thing from bacteria to us is basically a proton-powered battery. That level of universality is just it's stunning.
It's the deep signature of the CCP. Life didn't invent some complex new engine from scratch. It just got really, really good at using a natural gradient that was already there.
And once that was in place, the single cell became the first complete coherence architecture.
That's the threshold. That's when chemistry becomes autonomous.
Right.
Because the cell perfectly integrates those three requirements. The chemical flow is metabolism.
It's the energy gradient.
The cell wall is the membrane.
The boundary.
And critically, information DNA, RNA, that provides the regenerative mechanism. It lets the patterns be stabilized and copied. You couple flow, boundary, and repair, and poof, you have life.
Okay, so if the cell is the blueprint for that kind of metabolic coherence, how does that same logic scale up into the mesocosm? Into things you can't touch, like minds and culture and governance.
The scaling factor is anticipation. Simple life is just reactive.
Right. It bumps into things.
Exactly. But complex life, especially with a nervous system, evolves because it can create internal models of the world. Minds are engines of predictive coherence. They spend a ton of energy trying to minimize surprise, to anticipate the future.
And our emotions are subjective experiences. The source material says they're part of that machinery. They're not just some random side effect.
That's a crucial point. Emotions are regulatory coherence signals. They integrate your body's state, your nervous system, your social environment into one command. Fear, for example, isn't just a feeling. It's a system-wide maneuver to mobilize resources and protect you. Sadness might be a signal to conserve resources.
Okay, so the mind is the coherence engine for one person. Then language and culture must be the infrastructure that scales that coherence across millions of people.
Absolutely. Language is a coherence infrastructure. Huh. It lets us create shared world models, shared expectations. It's what enables cumulative cultural evolution.
Meaning society can, what, store and build on its own ideas?
Yes. It's coherence that bootstraps itself, leading to this unprecedented collective action.
But coordinating all that action.
Yeah.
That's where things get messy.
Hmm. Which brings us to governance, the steering mechanism.
Governance is what the source calls the metacoherence of society.
Hmm.
And its health depends on how well it aligns three things. Power, the ability to enforce rules.
Okay.
Legitimacy, the collective belief that those rules are right.
And institutional capacity, the actual practical ability to get things done.
Now, we see institutional failure and polarization all over the place. I mean, cynicism is rampant.
Yeah.
If governance is supposed to maintain coherence, why is it failing so spectacularly right now?
Well, according to the CCP, that systemic failure is social decoherence. That's what it looks like. When power gets uncoupled from legitimacy, say through corruption, the system loses trust. When institutional capacity collapses, you know, gridlock, the system loses its ability to repair itself.
You end up with a fractured system that can't solve complex problems.
Precisely.
Let's make that final leap then to the macrocosm. The framework says human civilization has become a superorganism. A single system with its own metabolism and nervous system. Now, wait, is that just a metaphor? I mean, where's the line between a truly integrated system and just a bunch of connected parts like a city street grid?
That's a really sharp question. And the difference is in the feedback loops. A superorganism is defined by its collective, coordinated flows. Our global supply chains, financial systems, digital networks, they aren't just connected. They're mutually dependent. They co-evolve to maximize this energy dissipation. When a market in Tokyo instantly reacts to a decision in Washington, that's a nervous system.
And when we consume planetary resources and exhale waste globally?
That's a metabolism. It's a single coupled system. A very inefficient one, maybe, but a single system.
And that system lives inside another one, Earth itself, which the source material frames as a self-regulating coherence system.
Right. And this is where we hit our ultimate constraints. The planetary boundaries, climate stability, biodiversity, the nitrogen cycle, those are the non-negotiable rules of the game. They're the planet's own physiological limits.
So we can manage our own internal coherence all we want, but if we push those external boundaries too far,
the larger system breaks, and it takes us with it.
So this coherence lens, what does it tell us about all the crises we see today? Climate, inequality, political fracture. Are these all separate problems?
No. The CCP argues they are coordinated symptoms of a macro-level decoherence. The source highlights three main failures. First, metabolic overshoot. We got hooked on fossil fuels, which it brilliantly calls the anabolic steroids of civilization.
Okay.
It led to this hypermetabolism, unsustainable growth, and the planet's fever, climate change.
Then there's the internal disease, the metabolic distortion from extreme inequality.
Exactly. Inequality acts like a cancer. When resources and information are hoarded in one part of the system while other parts starve, it weakens the whole body. It's a structural weakness, not just a moral failing.
And finally, the highest level failure of all, the worldview crisis.
This is the information failure. Our collective stories, like the myth of infinite growth or the idea that we're somehow separate from nature, they're just not coherent with physical reality. It's like running a planetary supercomputer with a buggy, outdated software.
That brings us to the final synthesis, then. The coherence transition. The source says we're at the edge of chaos.
Which sounds bad, but it means instability, yes, but also maximum potential for innovation. We face two very clear evolutionary paths.
Path one feels pretty familiar. Decoherence and collapse. The failures just cascade.
The alternative is the shift to a regenerative civilization. And this isn't just some nice idea. It means consciously redesigning our economies, our governments, our cultures to align with Earth's own regenerative coherence.
So moving from linear extractive systems to circular resilient ones.
Think regenerative agriculture, decentralized governance, a culture focused on reciprocity.
So the ultimate takeaway is that coherence is the organizing principle of reality and regeneration is just its method. But what really stands out to me is the final responsibility this puts on us.
Well, what's fascinating is that we seem to be the first species that cannot just evolve coherence blindly.
Right, through trial and error.
But actually consciously design it. We're the first beings on this planet who can read the metabolism, the information flows, the boundaries of the entire system as one living thing.
That makes humanity the first self-aware coherence agent. We can actually choose the trajectory. But is the source material realistic about that? I mean, is regenerative civilization just an appealing philosophy that ignores all the entrenched interests that benefit from the chaos?
I think the authors would argue that the cost of maintaining the incoherence is rising faster than the political cost of changing things. The real question is whether that crisis signal gets loud enough, soon enough, to force the collective nervous system to act.
And that really is the core question for you to mull over. If you are a self-aware coherence agent and you can see this universal grammar of order, what does that responsibility demand of you right now? That's your deep dive homework.